You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Welcome to episode 211 of the Unholy Trinity Podcast, brought to you in association with Sports Social, Europe's biggest sports podcast network. And all the fancy. Me and Lisa take you through the next 45 minutes to an hour or so, We all say, because we can't wait for this break as under the feet at Old Trafford yesterday. Obviously, 2-0, 2-0. And very much, you know, the minds are set the same. Same old story, wasn't it? It's repeating itself most weeks at the moment. And a game that you could argue Everton didn't play too badly. I use the word too. You know, we weren't tremendous by any stretch of the imagination. Had a lot of the ball. Three to the few. Chances, had a lot of shots, but succumbed to two moments of madness and two daft challenges by two of our defenders. But Lee, you know, we went to Old Trafford thinking, you know, not a great United side, it's got to be said. We said that last week, you know, they certainly aren't uprooting any kind of trees. They're a massive outside chance now for Champions League football as well. And, you know, the fear factor associated with Old Trafford isn't really there anymore, in my opinion. And Everton started the game off fairly well on the front foot. So how disappointing is it to come away with nothing, you know, no points yet again from there. And it'd be down to two moments of pure madness and switching off and two really, really daft tackles, which gave away two penalties and killed the game.
Yeah. I mean, to use Dice's post-match comments, it was very much same old, wasn't it? I think I do agree with you. I think one of the worst United teams we've seen for a while, although I feel every time we record a podcast when we play United, I seem to say the same thing. I know they had a lot of players out injured, a lot of key players as well, they will probably say. But, you know, with the money they've spent and the squad they've accumulated, they still put out a half-decent team. And, you know, I was really impressed in the first, you know, you went with the same side first and foremost, and we'll come on to discuss a bit later in terms of the right-back situation. I do feel he needs to be a bit braver, Sean Dyche. Now he's clearly, Godfrey's, in my opinion, rightly kept his place to a point, but, you know, the offer is nothing really, or him and Mikalenko to an extent, offer is nothing going the other way. You know, I do think, like I said, he needs to be braver, but we'll come on to that a bit later. But we started off on the front foot. I like the fact we had the bravery to press them high. And, you know, Casemiro was regularly giving the ball away to them, wasn't it? For them, sorry. And, you know, it was working. We were getting into good positions, but you know, we were obviously texting each other in the group. When we were winning it back in those positions, rather than just being calm and taking a touch and then waiting for, you know, the right ball or even to take it on themselves, just seems to just panic. And that's a common theme with us at the minute in front of goal, isn't it? Every time we get in and around the opposition box, we just panic. There's no element whatsoever of composure at all, is there? You know, I referenced last week on the podcast, didn't I, about, you know, when we scored three there and James scored a superb goal. And, you know, that's the type of composure I mean. Do you know what I mean? Someone just with that little bit of, you know, a bit of quality. And, I thought Gomez would give us that, but then he brings him on and within 5 minutes he's dropping him deeper. So he's not impacted it in the final third. So, you know, because he took Garner off. But going back to the start of the game, I thought we started well. We were the better side, certainly. They didn't come out out the gate very well whatsoever. You know, Old Trafford was quiet. United are arguably playing for nothing in the league. Now everything's hinging on this game in the Cup next week for the FA Cup. So it was a perfect time to play them. And I just feel if we just had that little bit more quality and confidence, and confidence is a big phrase as well at the minute in front of goal, I think we'd have done what Fulham did the other week. We'd have won the game.
That's it, isn't it? You know, the way of composure, we've used it quite a few times in recent weeks, I think, especially in the games where we've had a few chances. And even when we haven't and we get into the final third, the common theme is that everything just seems to fall apart and lose all composure. And there's no thought in what we do. I mean, I think I said to the two of you yesterday, you know, when we got anywhere around the box, even on strained angles when a cross wasn't on, the first thought was to try and cross the ball in the box. And sometimes better was why, because he received the ball. And we're still trying to throw the ball into the box because the core is coming at the back post. And you just think, you know, that's obviously to order. I mean, because since Sean Dyche has come in, we've seen us do that quite often, where we get the ball out wide, it was just been our strength, and we've then been putting crosses in. But even if you think back to last season, the likes of Dwight McNeil, he wasn't just putting the cross in for cross and see. He would always try and get to the byline. And sometimes he'd win a corner. Sometimes he put a good ball across. Whereas now it's almost the case of if it gets pulled back, the first thought is like cross the ball in and just see what happens. And that's not good. You know, you give him a bit more creativity and a bit more composure, especially against sides like United. You know, you've got Lindelof was playing left back, wasn't he, yesterday? You know, because you haven't got a left back. And you think, you know, you've got 47-year-old Johnny Evans playing centre-half. And Everton didn't once try to exploit those two situations where you've got one centre-half playing out of position and you've got another one who's past his sell-by date. He's got absolutely no pace anymore. And the one time we did put him under a bit of pressure and played the ball down his side, Beto did him for pace, really, and put him on his backside. So why not do that more often instead of just going back to type, knocking the ball around and then get, you know, become clueless in the final third? And that's the really frustrating thing, because we're not talking about, you know, we're talking about good sides. It's not about uprooting trees and becoming a side that we're not, and things that we can't do. It's about thinking about what you're doing. And that's why we say, you know, that's where the concern comes in about when it comes to us winning matches and obviously trying to stay in the Premier League. You've got to score goals. And in recent weeks, okay, we scored against Brighton and we scored against West Ham. How many quality chances really are we creating? We've created some chances, but the quality of chances yesterday, yeah, we had a lot of shots, but how many real quality chances did we create yesterday?
I think it's we were just discussing it before we started recording, and I mean, it's definitely quantity, not quality, isn't it? In terms of chances, I'd even go as far as to say it's erratic. Yeah, I mean, it's erratic. The key word for me at the minute, and Dyche has got 3 weeks now to go away. I believe we're going to Portugal. Don't know where the money's coming from for that, by the way. The players are probably paying for it themselves. But
when he mentioned the European break, my honest first thought was somewhere in North Wales, to be honest with you, given our current financial situation. And to be honest with you, I'd stick them to North Wales as well.
Yeah, get them in the rivers. No, but the players are probably paying for it themselves, by the way. I wouldn't be surprised with the dire straits we're in financially at the minute. But anyway, that's a side story. But yeah, as I said, I'd go as far as to say it's erratic. And I think the key word at the minute for me, and we've got 3 weeks, as I said, you know, to go away and work on this, is patterns of play. That's the key phrase at the minute. Every side, pretty much nearly every side I watch in the Premier League, clearly seems to, you know, you can clearly see they've been working on things in training in terms of patterns of play. Whether that means, you know, recycling the ball out wide, you know, trying to create overloads out wide to get, like you mentioned before, McNeil getting to the byline, for example. At the moment, I think they're clearly being directed or told from Dyche and the coaching staff, anytime you get it out wide, whether it's deep or whatever, just whip it in. Because we've got two fantastic headers of the ball in Beto and Calvert-Lewin, and one of them is obviously playing. And just get it in the box. And for me, it's football has moved way beyond that now. You can't just whip it in the box like we used to years ago for Duncan and expect him to attack the ball every single time. You know, there's got to be a bit more quality about us. You know, I watched the Bournemouth, the end of the Bournemouth game yesterday, and obviously we're playing Bournemouth next. So I watched them to see how they were playing, and obviously they went 2-0 down, didn't they? You know, against Sheffield United side, who have really struggled this season. And you know, Bournemouth have struggled at home this season. And we'll come on to discuss that in a second. But I watched them in the second half, and obviously they were chasing the game. But they had Iwatara down the left-hand side. And every time he got the ball, mate, he just ran at them. He just ran. A bit like Garnacho did against us. You know, sometimes it lacked a bit of quality. But the point is, he's running at the fullback. Do you know what I mean? He was constantly running at the fullback, committing the fullback and causing problems. And it led to a couple of chances. Now, I look at our wingers, and we haven't got anyone like that, have we? Their first thought, as soon as they get it, is to run straight at the fullback and commit the fullback. If you speak to anyone that plays fullback, what's the worst thing they don't want? They literally don't want a winger running at them straight away. And if you look at Garnacho, right, I don't think he's as good as some Man United fans make out. By the way, don't get me wrong, he's going to get goal of the season for the goal he scored at Goodison. Of course he is. But the point I'm saying, you know, he did little more than just run at our players. Now, particularly the second penalty, both of them stonewall penalties, by the way. You can't complain about that. First one, Tarkowski is just, it's a bit of stupidity. And he's been superb this season. You can allow the odd gaff because that's going to happen at centre-back, even the best. And he didn't have to, you know, stick his foot in. I didn't like the way Garnacho, by the way, went down. But, you know, typically in that respect, he didn't. And he celebrated, didn't he, about 5 seconds later and walked off without a knock. But it was a penalty. And then the second one, he just goes on a mazy run. And how on earth James Garner and Onana haven't took the ball off him, by the way, because he doesn't even do a trick. He just cuts in on his weak foot. He's actually running into traffic. It's not as if he's going against the last man and Godfrey has to put a tackle in. Like, yeah, I've got to put a tackle in here because otherwise he's in. What does he do? He fries into a tackle. Absolutely flies off his feet like he is literally the last man. Yeah, if Garnacho had danced around him and then took it past Harrison and then, you know, dinked it over the keeper with his weak foot, you'd have gone, fair play, that's a hell of a goal, that. But he was never going to do that on his weak foot. And that was just two absolute gifts we've given him there, wasn't it?
And that is the really annoying thing. The fact that we're giving goals away, you know, it's goals that it's soft. And, you know, like you said, James Tarkowski's had a very good season and everyone can make mistakes. And to dive in on one of their better players, obviously, Garnacho's got quick feet. We've seen, obviously, what he can do. He had that moment of magic at Goodison Park. But from naive to dive in, he's going nowhere. He's on the side of the box, going absolutely nowhere. I mean, obviously, dramatic fall and things like that. We can't argue it's a penalty. That's the modern way, isn't it? Players lash themselves on the floor and when they get any kind of contact. But we certainly can't complain that two penalties were given. But then Godfrey, you know, you mentioned there that the run that was made, there was numerous times we had to take him out there, just clean him out. I'm sick of saying this about Everton. Over the last probably 3 months or so, I made this point time and again. We can see the goals where the opposition have been allowed to carry the ball past our players instead of us thinking, you know what, we're going to whip you up. It's basic. You take the yellow card and you get yourself back and you reset. Because at half time, going in at 1-0 down is much better than going in at 2-0 down. And then obviously the chance that we had at the end of the first half by Dwight McNeil, you know, one of our maybe two or three decent opportunities. You go in a 2-1 down, it's a different game again. So everyone's just aren't savvy at times and street-wise, and they don't say, they don't think. And that's what really frustrates me. In the situation, well, in any situation, you know, but in the situation we find ourselves in, you've got to do these things. You've got to think. Every single point is vital. A point yesterday would have been a big point because it's away at Old Trafford. I know not a great side, but a point is a point. And we've got to think like that, that every point helps. And our challenge is frustrating that we do sit there. And from an attacking sense, we're not particularly compelling to watch. And it can be frustrating from a fan perspective. But if you're going to set us up in the way that we set up and you want to be hard to beat, do those kind of things that ensure that you keep a clean sheet and you keep them out. Don't be stupid. Don't be too nice and let players walk past you, because that gets you absolutely nowhere. It's frustrating because in the last three games, you know, we go back to Brighton, we were minutes away from winning a game away from home, which would have been obviously a big 3 points. The West Ham game, you know, you could argue we were the better side, certainly had the better opportunities. We saw the volume of chances. We had better opportunities against West Ham than we did against United. And then the United game, they were poor. We were poor, but had a lot of the ball, had a lot of shots, got into some good areas. But even the commentary team made reference to it. Everton seems to get to the final third and then don't know what to do. I think we had double the amount of touches in their box, in their final third, sorry, than they had on the final third. It's incredible. They've gone to Old Trafford away from home and doubled the touches in their final third compared to what they did to us. That tells you we are getting into certain areas. But when we get to certain areas, look at the one, chances created, and the XG and the quality of chance created. And two, touches in the opposition box, and they drop off a cliff. And that's the concern. Like you say, when we go away now for these 3 weeks, what are they going to work on? And you're totally right. Patterns of play. When you're getting in and around the box, or when you're building up to get into those key areas, you know, what do we do? How do we do it? It just can't be. We go along, let's see the ball sticks, or we lift the ball around. The side now are giving us possession. We are getting more of the ball. It's you know, it's a great point that he makes. We become a side that we're, you know, happy with 30% possession, and we're winning games, by the way, against loads of different sides. So now us being worked out inside saying, go on then, have the ball, see what you can do, and we don't like it. So now we're going to have the ball. You've got to find a way to adapt. What do we do with the ball? You've got to be effective. And that there's a lot of work to be done in the next few weeks for us to then come out against Bournemouth and be a better side.
Yeah, and look, you're not going to suddenly turn into Barcelona and play tiki-taki stuff, but we're not asking for that, are we? We're asking just for a little bit more quality and a little bit more composure in the final third. You know, when I can't even remember the last time, you know, particularly out wide, where, you know, when was the last time we had even had a give and go? You know, a little 1-2 to get, you know, run off your man. You know, you watch Saka, who's absolutely brilliant against fullbacks. The amount of times Ben White gets beyond him and he either uses him a decoy or obviously slides him in. But then if that pass isn't on, he's looking to play inside to like an Odegaard or something like that. And then he's looking for a 1-2. He's always looking for a 1-2. He's looking for a give and go every single time. Because, you know, as old school as it sounds, if you get that right and the defender switches off, you're in behind. I cannot remember the last time one of our wingers, either Harrison or McNeil, played a give and go with our fullback or even anyone in midfield inside. You know, just simple, you know, third man runs, anything like that. We just don't engineer those sort of chances. And, you know, I don't know whether you've read the article by Paddy Boylan in The Athletic. He released it this morning. And it's a really, really good article in the fact that it goes on to say that Everton have been resilient under Dyche in the main, so much so, obviously, they were one of the best defences in the league. But then in the last, sort of, say, half a dozen games, we've lost that solidity. You know, we've really lost that solidity at the back. So it's now putting more and more pressure on, obviously, the goal scorers. Whereas before, obviously, we were in very low-scoring games, weren't we? We had the nil-nils, 1-1s, anything like that. Now, all of a sudden, you know, we've given, let's be honest, we've given West Ham a gift in a couple of goals. And then we've given United two absolute gifts yesterday. Now, United, both those penalties, you know, represented 1.6 of their XG, which was like, well, I think it was 2.4, something like that. You know what I mean? So aside from that, I think it's 1.14 XG, what they generated from outside the two penalties. Now, look, we don't want to be like, we're not XG merchants, but it gives you an idea in terms of quality of chances. They barely created a thing. I mean, if you watch the highlights, by the way, on Sky, which is, you know, obviously they put them out on YouTube, it's 3.5 minutes long. They show one Everton chance. You know what I mean? Don't get me wrong, Pickford made a great save from Fernandez for the free kick. Hell of a save. And then they had a scramble from a corner, didn't they? And I know he put one round the post for Fernandez as well, but he was a fairly easy save for a keeper of his level. But really, that just shows you there, the fact they're only showing one Everton chance. That just shows you that the quality of chances that we were creating. McNeil had one that flashed by either post, and he had a great volley, great technique, just cut across the ball slightly, just went wide. But on another day, when it's going for you, that goes in. You know, about 10, 15 minutes later, he had another one that flashed across the post. Again, about half a yard wide. Now, McNeil yesterday started the game. It's the best I've seen him play for a while, certainly in that first half. And then second half, as he was tiring, he tends to do what he normally does sometimes, which is run down rabbit holes and blind alleys, doesn't he? And tends to just sort of give the ball away, you know, gets crowded out. But, you know, I've said this before, you can see why we were so adamant we were trying to get or pursue Nonto in the transfer window, because it's exactly what we need right now. We need someone who can just, A, score goals from out wide, but B, just commit fullbacks and run at them. Now, I kind of feel for Harrison because he's obviously, you know, he's in a real poor vein of form at the minute. A lot of that, like a lot of players in our team at the minute, is down to confidence. And, you know, some fans, he's the latest boo boy for some people. You know, you can't question his work rate. You know, he does have that pace. He runs up and down that side. He covers his fullback. But, you know, in an ideal world, let's be honest, mate, we'd take him out of the side and give him a rest, wouldn't we? Same with McNeil. You know, I mean, we'd take them out, let them have a bit of a rest, let them, you know, maybe come on as a sub, maybe impact the game that way. But we haven't even got that luxury right now, have we?
That luxury for a long, long time, especially this season. You know, you look at the options in terms of, you know, if you're looking to change it or you're looking to rotate players, who can you bring on? Who can you bring in? And we know he's got certain favourites. You know, McNeil is one of them. We know how good he was in the second half of last season. We know the issues he's been having off the field, the personal issues, which obviously comes into things. Of course it does. But the difficult thing is what do you do to actually change it? Because, you know, with the best will in the world, who can you bring in from the start? I mean, Lewis Dobbin got a little bit of time yesterday. You know, he got his goal against Chelsea going back to December. He's a name that's been mentioned, obviously, because there's no one else. You can, you know, Ashley Young, he got a few consecutive games, didn't he, after his injury. Didn't really work, so dropped back to the bench. So you're thinking to yourself, you know, looking forward and looking, you know, beyond these series break that we've got, what can we do going forward now in terms of freshening things up? What changes did we make? I mean, you mentioned, you know, we've discussed Ben Godfrey there, and it was mentioned in Paddy Boylan's article in The Athletic as well, in terms of the last few games, he's been the centre of the goals that we conceded. Obviously, give away a penalty against Manchester United. So it's high to further when, obviously, a defender basically gives a goal away. Now, the options are right, Beth. I know you're a big fan of Nathan Patterson. I'm a big fan of Seamus Coleman, and I think Seamus Coleman, I'm pretty, you'd probably agree, is our best right-back, even at the age of, 35 years of age. If he's fit, he's our best right-back. And he's also, said it yesterday on social media, he's a leader. He's been here before, the last few seasons. He knows the situation. And it's all going good than being on the bench and, you know, trying to give the players instructions at half-time and before the game. But there's no substitute for being on the pitch and leading. And I think we need that. I really think that we need him on the pitch. And people have got, you know, we had that yesterday on social media, someone saying, you know, he's terrible, he's gone backwards. Well, the same with someone who was, you know, when he was 25 years of age, 10 years ago. We know he's older. We know his game is different and he's had to adapt. But I'll tell you now, He offers a lot more going forward than Ben Godfrey does. 100% he does. His link-up play with the winger in front of him is much better as well because he's more experienced. He's not a centre half. He's a right back. So straight away, there's three things that go into his favour for me. So even we're not going to be making changes. Obviously, we're going to do. I'm going to preview a match which is in 3 weeks' time. But beyond this break now, we're looking to freshen things up. The one change that we've got to make for me is Seamus Coleman coming in at right back.
I think the right back is a really, really interesting shout right now because, like I said before earlier on, Godfrey came into the side out of necessity, didn't he? And fair play, like anyone who comes into the side, what are you going to do to try and hold down your place? Once you're in, how are you going to claim that shirt? And he did that, didn't he? You know, he had some very solid games at right back. You know, he was up and down the line. We know he's athletic. He had a couple of, let's be fair, mate, he had a couple of matches, two, let's say, goal-saving clearances at the back stick, you know, using his pace. And he was getting a lot of plaudits from fans for coming in the side and staking his claim, like I said before. But since then, you basically, whether how you dress it up or not, since he's been at Everton, he's had his best games at either left-back or right-back more recently. You know, we bought him as a centre-half. First and foremost, we've basically got a centre-back playing at right-back right now when we've got two right-backs on the bench. Now, there's certain games where you would say his pace, a bit like when Kyle Walker plays for City, his pace gets us out of trouble. And I can understand that if he's playing against a quick, tricky winger, you know, like a Doku or someone like that. But, you know, let's be honest. Dyche yesterday should have had the bravery to go, you know what, we're 2-0 down at half-time. I'm going to bring on either Patterson or I'm going to bring on Seamus Coleman. I agree with you. I'd have brought Coleman on first choice. And to be fair, I even said to you two, I'd have even brought on Patterson ahead of Dobbin to play right mid as well. Now, I know that might be contentious for some people. People have been calling for Dobbin to get more of a run in the team. But whenever I've seen him play, I know he scored a good goal against Chelsea. He's not really shown anything to me that he should be playing week in, week out. Do you know what I mean? He kind of runs. He's obviously got pace. He's very direct, but I think I can't remember what game it was earlier in the season when he came on. He had about 15, 20. He just seemed to just run down blind alleys. You know, he just seemed to just run with the ball and set. And players were even saying to him, look, calm down, just keep the ball. And for me, yesterday, it was crying out to have a more offensive fullback at right. We haven't got that luxury at left back, but we have got that luxury at right back in the fact that we have got someone there who's nowhere near the player he was, but he's been a fantastic servant for us as a footballer. But Coleman should be on the pitch. You said about his leadership qualities as well. That comes into it in games like this as well. He won't be overawed, will he, going to Old Trafford? Not that it was intimidating yesterday, by the way. You could hear a pin drop. But the point I'm saying is you know, Dyche's there. I know he made changes and he's been criticised for that in the past. He did make a triple change first and foremost. But, you know, for me, he should have definitely gone on and brought a more offensive fullback on. And you could even say that when we played West Ham recently as well. And before that, we played Palace. You know, having a more attacking fullback just gives us something down that right-hand side. It just gives us something because, you know, I've said it before a million times, creativity in so many teams comes from fullback nowadays. And I do feel, you know, he missed a trick there yesterday not changing that position. And he needs to think about doing that when we play Bournemouth next.
Yeah, you know, we've discussed fullbacks at length over the course of the season, really. Obviously, the improvements of Mikhailenko on the left-hand side. Even to the point that we thought he's improving in an attacking sense as well, especially when we were in good form. He was really involved, wasn't he? You know, scoring a few goals as well along the way. We need him across the board. You know, I think that is part of the problem with Everton is that when we were talking about lack of quality in the final third and lack of substance is probably the best way to look at it. We get up there, don't know what to do. You know, we haven't been working on anything in the final third. I'm sure we have, but as you say, patterns of play, you know, so important. And that, for me, is vital in terms of getting your fullbacks overlapping, getting them involved with the attack and play, getting them putting crosses in, so whether it's Seamus Coleman. We saw Godfrey yesterday, you know, a few times, and it was the first half, and second half, to be fair, where he's gone beyond the wings. Quality at the cross is really, really poor. And that's no good. You know, just even throwing the ball into an area is no good. There's got to be more thought to it. So I think getting the fullbacks involved is probably going to be a big part of the improvements. It gets more bodies in and around the area as well. But
Mike, just quickly there, mate, you mentioned before, right, Godfrey was at fault for one of the goals yesterday, so was Tarkey, obviously, so he gave away the pen. Paddy mentioned his article as well about being at fault for two goals before that as well. So West Ham, he lost Zuma, didn't he? And Zuma got a jump on him and buried it from a corner. In the game before that, he was also, you could arguably say, at fault for the goal there. Did he lose it to the ball in the air in the game before that? Lewis Dunk. So, you know, if you're going to play centre-half at right-back, overall, when he first came in the side, we were looking really solid. We were keeping clean sheets. So there's an argument, like I said before, to say, you know what? He's keeping his place because we're keeping clean sheets. The last three games there, you can make an argument that he's been at fault for three goals. So therefore, if he's not offering you that much going the other way, which we know he doesn't, then what's going on? You know, Daesh can see that. He's got to have the bravery again to change that. He's got to. You know, and he will come up against, you know, quick wingers when we play Bournemouth next. I mentioned Diwatara before. They had Sinisterra as well. Both of them two are playing down the left-hand side. You know, they're quick, tricky wingers. Both of them two players would get in our team right now. You know what I mean? Because they actually commit players. So in a weird way, you could almost say, yeah, look, do we start with Godfrey because we know he's coming up against a tricky winger there? Or do we have the bravery to go, you know what, we're going to push him back the other way. We're going to get them to think about us going the other way. Now, there's also a case here, and it'd be interesting to see what you think. You know, I talked about before, you know, the resting the likes of McNeil and what's his face on the right-hand side?
Harrison.
Now, there's an argument to say with the cross he put in against West Ham, do you play someone like James Garner over there if Idrissa Gueye's fit? You know what I mean? Playing on the right-hand side, because if we're going to criticise the crossing of our team, he's arguably probably the best crosser in the team, isn't he?
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Certainly, you know, that's another question. We're talking about freshening things up, but then you go back to the age-old point of, and we've been here before, but probably it's still there now, about square pegs, round holes. Comes into play, and we're just, you know, we're trying to make things happen, so we're putting players out of position. I mean, we saw James Garner last season play as a wing-back, didn't we? At one point, he'd done for England under-21s as well. So definitely to a point for England, but didn't quite work out for us. So we're looking at doing different things. You know, Garner Gueye getting back fit, I'm sure he'll be fit for the Bournemouth game. You know, he's another player to add to that squad. But the wide areas really are a puzzle and an issue for us. But like you said earlier on in the show, the problem we've got is we've got no one there to freshen things up. Outside of Lewis Dobber, obviously Dan Juma still injured and Sean Dyche said, you know, we're looking post-international break, maybe the first game back well again. That could be too soon. But we haven't got players to bring on or bring in to freshen things up. We do have the option, as I say, at right back. And, you know, in terms of Ben Godfrey, we advocated for him to be starting because he was in good form. And I always say, if you're in form, then you play. If you're out of form and you've got options to change it, you change it. So he has dropped off. He has looked poor the last few weeks or so. So therefore, you've got two other right backs on the bench. One who's the club captain, who's probably better for me than both Patterson and Godfrey defensively as a right back, and also definitely better going forward than Ben Godfrey. And I'd probably say, you know, Patterson is better going forward, I think, than defending. But I think Coleman, even because of his experience, probably gets a nod there as well. So you've got to look, when you can make changes and when you can look to bring people in for players who aren't quite on it, for whatever the reason might be, then you've got to do it. You can't just always rely on players playing themselves back into form. Not in our situation. There's not enough games left. There's 10 games to go. You know, we've got a lot of games, you know, in inverted commas, winnable games. Well, you've got to win them. You haven't won a game since December the 16th. it's a long, long time, you know, to win, you know, to go, not win the game of football. And we've been close in a few, and we've said it on the podcast, there's been a couple of, you know, a few good performances along the way, and we acknowledge that, and that gives you hope and gave us hope. We haven't then turned that hope into wins, and that's always a concern. The longer it goes, you know, the more the confidence drops, the more difficult it is to get that confidence back. And we're just lucky at the moment that sides below us are performing particularly well. You know, Luton nicked a point late on against Palace. Burnley threw away two late on against West Ham today. Forest got beat again. Obviously, Sheffield United, they're the ones who jumped the points and do 2-2 at Bournemouth. So we've been lucky that those sides around us are not picking up many points at all. So we've had two chances in the last 2 weeks, West Ham at home and United away. So before other sides were even playing, we've had a chance to pull ourselves away. And psychologically, if we had won one of those games, the impact on those sides is massive. And Everton haven't had it in them to go and do that. And that concerns me massively. I mean,
and in those two games that you're talking about, we conceded 5 goals.
Yeah.
You know, we never looked in a million years like conceded 5 goals, you know, probably 4 or 5 games ago. That this is the point I'm saying. You know, we've lost that solidity at the back. And I understand football's a balancing act. He is probably trying to maybe, you know, be a bit more attacking because we aren't scoring goals. But then we're now losing that solidity at the back. And, you know, if we're losing that solidity at the back and then we're still not carrying a threat and scoring goals, you're in the worst situation you can be. You know, I was of the opinion, and I'm sure most fans were, it hasn't been pretty to watch in a lot of these games we've had in the last 5, 6 or 7. But we've always been in every game because we've looked solid. And now all of a sudden, you know, okay, West Ham, I know they got 2 late goals, which kind of like, you know, caveats that a little bit. And we've given away two ridiculous penalties yesterday. But the point I'm saying is we're starting to concede more. And we, you know, we've conceded from a few set pieces, which we weren't doing earlier on in this run either. So he really has to get this balance right. And there's an argument to say yesterday, I liked the fact we were brave and we pushed them high, and it did work to a point, even though when we won it back, we didn't do enough with it. But then you look at Erik ten Hag's comments post-match, and he was saying that he knew Everton were going to do that. So he played Bruno a bit deeper and then effectively knew that he could get Rashford and Garnacho away on the counter-attack effectively or on transition. And that effectively led to them being a threat on the counter, because United of today are probably a little bit like us. They don't really want the ball, do they? They're more of a counter-attacking team. So, you know, whether Ten Hag is just saying that now in hindsight, because they, you know, both their goals came from breakaways where Garnacho has broke on the transition. But maybe he was. Maybe he knew we were going to do that. So therefore, the big Old Trafford pitch, he took advantage of it, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. And, you know, that's what good managers do, of course. They do the research. They look at, you know, where the game can be won and where the game can be lost. And they adapt things. And obviously, it worked in their favour. But there's been a lot of talk, obviously, the pressure around the manager. Now, you know, there is some. Of course, there is some. You know, we discussed it. I've written about it, and you know, we know he's working in such a difficult environment at this moment in time. You know, it's unheard of what he's gone through in the, what are we now, 13, 14 months since he's been at the club, is unparalleled to anything probably anyone reminds you has seen in the Premier League, and so we know it's difficult. We haven't won a game since December the 16th. And part of me sort of thinks that, you know, the Farhan Nashiri of old, if he was asked, he probably would have pulled the trigger by now, to be honest. That's my personal opinion. I'm not saying that's what I'm saying could happen. You know, we've been here too many times in the past. But what's your thought on that, Lee, in terms of he's obviously under pressure. Finances also dictate as well. Of course, Everton aren't going to want to pay a manager off given our current situation. The fact that we haven't even got an owner in a manner of speaking because of what's going on as well. What's your thoughts on the pressure on the manager? Do you think that a time would come where Everton would look to change it? Because given the fact we've got Bournemouth away, Newcastle away, before we get Burnley at home and then go to Chelsea, you know, the following week.
I know some fans are obviously rightly disgruntled, and I am as well, and so are you. You know, it's not good enough not winning a game since December the 17th when we went on a four-game winning run, wasn't it? Where not long after you got the points deduction. Obviously, everything's about momentum. We lost the momentum, arguably after the cup game, wasn't it? Which, you know, let's be honest, we should have gone through. You can't all pin it on a missed penalty, but we did lose a bit of momentum there, which unfortunately has stuck with us. We made the point last week on the podcast, we've had some really tough games in that time, and we have. But like you said before, it's now becoming an issue. It's now becoming a confidence issue. That game yesterday was the first time I was a bit concerned. And when I say concerned, it's just that, you know, we just didn't look anywhere near as solid as we have done in previous games. And that's what concerned me a little bit, in the fact that, you know what, if we're not banging him in the other end, at least we're looking watertight at the back. Tarkowski and Branthwaite are arguably been the two best, and the stats have shown it as well, the two best centre-backs in the league this season, or pair, centre-back pairing, that is, alongside sort of Gabriel Saliba and Konate and Van Dijk, isn't it? So we have looked a lot more solid with them. So those two have been superb this season, and that'll be a real positive. But because of late, as I said before, we've conceded five in the last two. We are now looking a bit more leaky, and we're just not having anything resembling like a goal scoring threat coming from anywhere going the other way, other than maybe set pieces. And even they've tailed off. You know, our set pieces yesterday were, in the main, they were poor. So that's the first time yesterday I did feel a little bit worried. Now, a lot of it's going to hinge on this points deduction thing again. And, you know, obviously that got brought up recently. I don't know whether anyone saw the overlap with Baz from Toffee TV. I always think he does a superb job for us when he goes on there. I thought he acquitted himself really well again. And I thought, you know, Carragher was doing his best to shout over him when they were trying to have a sensible debate, which I thought was a bit of a joke, to be honest. You know, I think they were trying to talk about the point system. I think Neville brought up a great point to say, hold on a minute, why is FFP suddenly a thing? You know, they could have really had a sensible debate around PSR and FFP if it wasn't for Carragher in the middle shouting his head off, going, you spent loads of money. You know what I mean? Like a petulant 12-year-old child. But going back to the point I'm saying is, you know, there's clearly been a problem with us with this point deduction, and we were waiting for the outcome. And we made the point that that's definitely affected the way Dyche has set us up. The problem is now it's hard to come out of that, isn't it? It's hard to suddenly then change and suddenly become what we were when we won those four games on the spin. You can't just press a switch. And I know he has tried to be more attacking. And, you know, we've had over 20 shots again, as we did against West Ham. But like I said before, and we both said at the start of the podcast, that's more quantity in terms of shots instead of quality. And that for me needs to change. That, you know, I'd rather us have half the shots, but, you know, they're really, you know, you've got a great chance of scoring. And that's the problem that he needs to solve now. And we need to get right going into these last 10 games, because we're playing all those teams around us, aren't we? And we're going to have to get results. We're going to have to go to Luton and get a result. We've lost to them twice at home. We're going to have to go there and get a result. I don't care what you say. We're going to have to go there and get a result. And, you know, the same with Burnley. You've had a good result recently. Same with Sheffield United. Have had a good result. You know, they're starting to show a little bit there now. So these aren't walkover games, and certainly not for a team that's not scoring goals right now.
No, they're not. And, you know, once we get back from this international break, you know, that's the running. There's your 10 games. There's your season right there. You know, combine that with the second hearing that we've got in regard to this second charge. Potentially then combine that with an appeal hearing. If we roll down that road, depends on what the outcome is. The chances are we're going to see more points, whether it's one, two, whatever it might be, taken off us. So you've got to factor it all in. Obviously, it makes it a bit easier if by the time the hearing comes around, or, you know, the result of the hearing happens, Everton have won two or three games. That makes it a lot easier. And if you then say, oh, we are 2 points off, you probably go, okay, fine, no appeal, let's get on with it. Probably done with it there and then, to be perfectly honest. But when you've been won for so long, we said it before, that winning is a habit and losing is an even worse habit, isn't it? And when you're in that situation, when you know, you just can't win a game of football, and we've argued that we've been better than the sides that have beaten us or taken points off us in recent weeks. But when it doesn't matter at the end of the day, And it's up to the manager now, obviously alongside the players, but the manager has got to now find a way with these players to win a game of football. And I'm fine with us being stubborn to beat. I'm fine with us. I said this at the time. I've got no problem with Everton setting up and being hard to beat because points are important. And I couldn't give a shit if Everton fans like it or not that we're a horrible watch, but we win a game of football. That is all that matters in our situation. If we nick a point here, if we win a game, you know, against whoever, I'm fine with that. So let's remember what we need to do. And let's think back to those games. Even when we won those four games on the spin, Everton weren't prolific in terms of, you know, number of chances created and quality of chances. But what we were is at times, we were clinical and set pieces were a real factor in that. And we were also difficult to break down. Defensively, we were solid. We've got to get back to that. And it's not going to be pretty, but that's the only way out of the situation that we find ourselves in. And, you know, this trip away to Portugal, great for them. It's needed, you know, press the reset button, a bit of warm weather. You know, let's get away and take our mind off things a little bit. I think it's really important that the players get that time and the manager gets that time with them to try and turn things around. But he's under pressure, and he should be under pressure. You know, it's just because the club is a difficult place to operate at this moment in time. It doesn't give anyone a free pass. And I said this last week, we lost to West Ham United and we were the better side. But we've got it. We can't hide behind a narrative that Everton is such a difficult place to be at the moment. And we had a chat before the game and also before we recorded today about the whole narrative around the club and the coverage on TNT yesterday before the game was all negative Everton, negative, you know, missing chances and Everton, you know, this kind of club and that kind of club. And listen, we can't, as a club, as a fan base, as players and as a manager, just hide behind that. Wipe it away, put it to one side and go and win a game of football. And us as fans have got to be right behind this team, right behind this manager, because we've got 10 games to save ourselves yet again for the third season on the spin, and it's draining as hell. But that's what we've got to do. And if we don't, the result doesn't bear thinking about.
No, I agree with what you just said there. I mean, look, football's always about players, isn't it, at the end of the day? Managers obviously have an impact, and of course they do, but you still got to have quality footballers. And I was just thinking about then, you know, in terms of the front three we had yesterday with McNeil, Beto and Harrison, if you like. Is that, for Dyche, would he rather have at his disposal Richarlison, Gordon and Iwobi there? So would Richarlison, Gordon and Iwobi get in the side ahead of them three? They probably would, wouldn't they? You know, as much as you want to criticise Gordon, and I thought he was probably overrated, but you've got to give the lad credit. He's gone to Newcastle, who haven't had the best season, by the way. You know, they're hovering around mid-table. They're not flying high like they were last year. But, you know, he's scored goals and assists. He's had, I think he's scored in four or five home games in a row, hasn't he? You know, so at the end of the day, if you're Dyche and you've got Richarlison, Gordon and Iwobi and you've got to choose between McNeil, Beto and Harrison, you're going to go for the former instead of the latter, aren't you? And that comes into it. So I will defend him a little bit in the fact that whilst I criticise him in terms of playing centre-backs at right-back and persisting with it, you know, not having enough patterns of play, probably being overly pragmatic in games where we should be a little bit more front foot. Ultimately, it does come down to players and those three getting ahead of the current three that played yesterday. And that's an important point to make. Also, on the flip side of that, you mentioned before about the narrative around us on the media and on TV. And we were obviously on TV yesterday for the early game. And TNT tend to be better, I think, in terms of their coverage instead of Sky. They tend to be a little bit more impartial. They tend to, in my opinion, tend to give more of a balanced view. They certainly reported Everton's, you know, campaign, if you like, against the points a little bit more balanced than Sky did. You know, they gave a lot more airtime to fans who were going there with the cards and everything else at the game. But, you know, yesterday they were talking about, you know, United versus Everton and the build-up. And to be honest, I mean, I said to you, you didn't watch the pre-match, but there was a section where they were talking about Everton's lack of, sort of, you know, killing threat in front of goal, which clearly played out in front of the game. So they were right to talk about it anyway. But they played a 1 minute or so montage of Everton just missing chances with literally God knows how many sound overlays of commentators, but basically one of the phrases that was overlaid onto someone missing a chance because we're a basket case of a football club. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that we are, you know, fluidly run. We're far from it. We are one of the worst run clubs. But you could make a case that United are a basket case of a football club right now as well. You know, and I said to you, I rang you at the time, and I was quite annoyed by him sitting here, relaxing in front of the TV, ready to watch the game. And I've just been played for a minute solid of us just missing a load of chances with commentators overlaid and pure and utter negativity. I'm sitting there going, what's going on? It's kind of annoying me before the game even starts. Do you know what I mean? And look, there is a narrative around the club. And don't get me wrong, some of it, you can throw at us. But that in particular just really, I don't know anyone else who obviously listens to this, caught the pre-match. That itself just really annoyed me. You know, if you're bringing someone like Wayne Rooney on, you know, talk to him about his time at Everton. Talk to him what Everton's problems are. He's an aspiring manager. What do you think our strikers should be doing? Let's have a conversation with one of the best strikers this country's produced. Do you know what I mean? And it was just lazy for me, that. And you know, it sums up the narrative around us at the minute. We're an easy target, aren't we, in that respect? But for me, still, there needs to be a balanced, you know, balanced view and reporting us as a club.
Well, we are an easy target, and we all understand why. And, you know, we say a lot of things ourselves, but I think you've got to look at things from a slightly wider angle. And I think it's very easy to focus in on one point and one narrative with the football club. We know, as fans, we know what's going on, and we know how hard it is because we live it week in, week out. You know, we're the ones who are sitting there wondering when we're going to have the ownership issue sorted out, which is dragging on and impacting things at the club. We're the ones who are watching the side week in, week out. We've got thousands of fans who travel away from home every other week and spend a lot of money doing so, watching at times poor performances and, you know, not seeing us win games of football. So we know on. And I'm sure others of you, other teams, man, outside it is to probably watch Everton, support Everton because of what we've been going through. But you've got to look at other things as well and give a more balanced view. And, you know, we're sitting here saying we're immune from any kind of negativity, any kind of bad press. But we've had that feel for the last how many years. We've had that feel, you know, the last 6 months has been horrendous. You know, and we know it's a terrible time for everybody associated with the club. But we've also got, fingers crossed, a bright future as well. That's the one thing that we have got. And, you know, it's... And I get your point. I know why it was done, and I get why it was done. And this is how football media and media works. It's sensationalised. It's magnified. And that's what gets people watching, listening, whatever it might be. You know, for us personally, we've always been trying to be as balanced as we possibly can without being reactive. That's just always been, that's just how we are as people. And when it comes to Everton, that's just what we're like. So that's why...
But mate, if you're paying 100 quid a month for this bloody, you know, which is ridiculous in today's day and age, you know, with the cost of everything's ridiculous, but if we're paying 100 quid a month to sit down and watch our team play when they're not on that often as it is anyway, I understand why in some respects we're not the greatest teams to watch. But I don't want to sit there listening to that. You know what I mean? You've brought Rooney on, great, because Rooney's played for both clubs. So finally they've got a pundit on actually that can represent both clubs. You know, and sitting there, have a chat with Rooney. He's an aspiring manager, or he has been a manager. Chat to him and say, look, what can Beto be and Dominic can be doing differently right now? You know, talk to us, Wayne. You were a striker. What can Everton be doing? You know, have four or five things ready in advance to say, look, Everton just throwing crosses in without quality, yada, yada, yada. You know what I mean? Just have that conversation. Don't just sit there and play to me that, you know, pure and utter negativity around, you know, literally, oh, it's a dark day over Goodison. Point deduction looming again. All these sound overlays were played over this minute montage. You know what I mean? And I'm just sitting there going, gee, I just want to watch and enjoy my football team on TV. You know, and like I said, I'm paying 80, 90, 100 quid a month to sit there and watch that. You know what I mean? But I just wanted to have a moan about it. It's not, in the grand scheme of things, it's not huge. But at the same time, I think it needs to be said. And the same thing that irked me was Carragher on us, as I said, on the overlap. And the fact that he was just constantly shouting over Baz, constantly talking about how much money we spent as a club. Even came out and said himself, give yourselves a transfer embargo then if you're overspending. Hold on a minute. So what? So Liverpool, what? Your salary as a club has just been released recently is more than twice our turnover as a football club. How are you even supposed to kick and compete with that? Our turnover is less than half what you're paying your players. You know what I mean? And for him to turn around and shout, oh, yeah, give yourselves a transfer embargo. When Baz was trying to make the point that the Premier League had signed off on every single transfer that we've had so far, and then suddenly, you know, reneged on all of that, didn't they? Because they wanted to obviously appear strong with the regulator. And like I said, it was a real opportunity for, you know, to discuss with, you know, Everton fan in the room, Forest fans in there, you know, Villa potentially going to be getting one. Baz mentioned about Leicester getting potentially 2 points hits. It was a real opportunity in that forum to have a sensible debate. And you've got a clown in the middle there just shouting over everyone. You know what I mean? And that just really, those two things really annoyed me because, you know, I felt Baz kept his cool really well. And I suppose he has to, you know, understand that. But, you know, I'd like to think if I was there, I probably would have said, look, Jamie, there's loads of fans here to come on your show here to talk about Everton Football Club and their respective clubs. You know, none of us have really come here to listen to you shouting over everybody else. Yes, come in with your points because you're hosting, but don't shout over us while we're trying to put a point across and have a sensible debate. I'm having a moan now. Sorry.
No, that's fine. Listen, I've said time and again that Everton fans have got to realise that Jamie Carragher is not a mouthpiece for Everton Football Club. He's not an Everton fan. He played for our biggest rivals for his whole career, whether he was at Wembley in whatever given year with a blue and white scarf on, makes absolutely no difference at all. Whether he's appeared on certain Everton shows makes no difference at all. So we're just going to get out of our minds. It's, you know, I know exactly what he is. And the fact that when you, like you say, I think Baz made his points really, really well. There came a time when he just had to go, just let it go in terms of, as he was making a point, when you got someone shouting over you, it just wastes your time. And, you know, it's one of those where you've got to just go, okay, well, I've said what I needed to say. You can just carry on shouting. I mean, he was saying, it's communicated. There's no research in it. It's just shouting. It's just picking up points that fans of other club and media heads who were fed information by the Premier League. It's what they say. So for us, I don't listen to those kind of people. And that's why I choose when it comes to if we aren't televised, I'm not at the game, I won't watch any kind of build-up. I'll literally wait until kick-off and I'll put it on because I'm not interested in what other people have got to say because it's after time. It's just not a true reflection of what's going on. It's really not. You know, and to say we are in a difficult time, we know that, you know, we're really going through it. We know the results aren't good enough. The manager's well aware that they aren't. I'm sure the players are well aware that the results aren't good enough. We're lucky at the moment, as I said earlier on, the sides around us are dropping points and not picking up points. And we're lucky that we've got to play those sides and the destiny is in our own hands. Even with a potential of a points deduction, the destiny's in our own hands. It's as simple as that. And that's what we need to sort of focus on after this three-week break. And I'm glad on a break. I think we need the break as a fan base and the players need the break to reset and go again. And then hopefully we can then look to kick on for these final 10 games. But that's all for today. Obviously, there's a three-week break. And we'll be doing a bit of a special podcast with the lads who Steve Dickinson, Lyndon Lloyd as well, who brought out the unofficial Everton timeline book. The machine year is frightening. It's who took out on Halloween, this book. It's that scary. So that will be getting recorded at some point this week coming up. So that'll be out in the break. So something for everyone to look forward to if we can. As I say, the machine years, what a frightening prospect that is to read about. So that'll be getting picked up this week. So we will be back over the course of the break before we then do come back officially after the Bournemouth game, which is just short of 3 weeks' time. At the back end of March, it must be Easter weekend, isn't it? Easter Saturday. So we'll be back that weekend to look back on that. Hopefully a bit more of a positive result. Hopefully things can start to look up and everything can finally get a win. So we will catch you then.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions. One Everton podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.